So today we are very fortunate that we are having Her Grace Priti Vilasini Mataji to enlighten us on Valmiki Ramayana. And today is the fifth part of Yuddha Kanda. And today Mataji will cover Karna's appearance in the battlefield and war continues. So thank you so much, Mataji, for giving your valuable Nectarian instructions from the pastimes of Lord Ram. So now, Mataji, you can continue class. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Pavitra Madhavi Mataji. Dandavat pranams to everyone on the call. After the prayers. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnana Janana Shalakaya Chakshurun Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Kiram Yat Krapa Tavaham Vande Shri Gurum Dina Tarinam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimati Radhanath Swami Niti Namne Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namne Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Pachayata Deshakarini Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prayers to Valmiki, Hanuman and Lord Sri Ramchandra. Kujantam Rama Ramiti, Maduram Madurakshiram, Arushya Kavita Shakam, Vande Valmiki Kokilam. Valmikir Munisimhasya, Kavita Vanacharinaha, Shrimvan Ramakatanatham, Konayate Paramgatim. Viravede Parikumsil Janti, Rasharatmaji, Vira Prachita Sadasi, Sakshat Ramayanatmana. Anjana Nandanam Vidam Janaki Shokanashanam Katisham Akshahantaram Vande Lanka Bhayankaram Manojavam Maritatulya Vegam Jitendriyam Buddhimatam Varishtam Vatatmajam Vanari Yudamakyam Sri Rama Dhutam Shivasanamami Anjaneya Madipatanalanam Kanchanadri Kamaniya Vigraham Parijata Tarumulavasinam Bhavayami Bhavamananandanam Yatra Yatra Raghunatha Kirtanam Tatra Tatra Krita Mastakanjalim Bashpavari Paripurni Lochanam Marutin Namata Rakshasantakam Sri Raghavam Dasharatmajam Apraneyam Sitapati Raghukulanmaya Ratnadeepam Ajanubahum Maravinda Dayala Daksham Ramam Vishachara Vinashakam Namami. Hare Krishna. So in the previous class, we stopped at a point where the war had started. And Indrajit struck Ram and Lakshman with a Nagastra, so arrows of serpents. And these arrows had struck them, and both of them fell down unconscious. So thinking that Ram and Lakshman were dead, Indrajit became very, very happy, and he went and told his father, Ravan, that Ram and Lakshman were dead and the war was over. Practically for all purposes, the war was over. In the sense, since the two heroes are gone, so we have very much won the war. So Ravana, he was very, very happy. He was excited, and he sent some Rakshasis to take Sita in the Pushpak Vimana and show the condition of Ram and Lakshman. So Sita at first, she lamented for a while, and then Trijata convinced her that actually Ram and Lakshman were still alive, and in fact no one can defeat them. Then Sita kind of calmed down. So this is where we stopped in the previous class. Now let's continue from there today. So meanwhile, many Vanaras, they were guarding the two brothers, Ram and Lakshman, because they both were fallen down. And Vibhishan told that just some of the Vanaras stand here and guard them. And Vibhishan went forward to give instructions to some of the other Vanaras to continue the fight. Okay, so some of the Vanaras were standing around the two brothers. And slowly, Ram, he woke up from a swoon. But he was unable to move from there. That is, he was lying down, but he regained consciousness, but he was unable to move. Then he looked around, and his eyes fell on his brother. When he saw Lakshman in that condition, where Lakshman was bleeding, and he was unconscious, fallen on the ground, and all his features were changing, Ram was filled with grief, and he began lamenting. He said, "Oh, my dear Lakshmana, what is this? What is the use of anything in this world to me? What is the use of me recovering Sita? What is the use of me living if you are like this, if you are in this condition, if you are going to go before my eyes? What is the use of anything? Are you being hurt? What happened to you?" Like that, he was lamenting. Then he said, if not in this world, maybe somewhere else, there could be someone who's somewhat close to Sita, you know, as a woman, as a wife. But nowhere in any of the worlds can I find a person, a brother, a friend like Lakshmana. No one can be as magnanimous as Lakshmana. If something happens to Lakshman, I will just give up my life. What will I go and tell my mother Kausalya or Kaike, or even how can I see the face of Sumitra who's waiting to see her son? How can I console Sumitra who'd be crying at the loss of her son if I don't return to Ayodhya without my Lakshmana? Lakshmana, please wake up. I hope nothing has happened to you. Then he began blaming himself. He was, Ram was telling, it's all because of me, all because of me. I'm to be blamed for everything. It's all my fault. Now Lakshmana is dead. He's almost dead in the bed of arrows. He's about to give up his life. What am I to do? My dear Lakshmana, please wake up. You used to console me whenever I was in pain, whenever I had a problem, whenever I was in sorrow. You were the one who was always by my side. I don't remember you having spoken a single harsh word or hateful words from your mouth towards me. Even when you were provoked, you would never say anything against me. You had so much love for me. So he said, Lakshmana, you're so great. You were able to simply shoot so many arrows in one shot. In fact, you were such a great archer that you were even as good as Kartavirya Arjuna in your archery. How will I live without you, Lakshmana? What happened to you? Why are you like this? Then he looked at Sugriva and he said, Sugriva, I think I have to give up. You better return home. Take all the Vanaras with you and go back to Kishkinta, and I will die here. If Lakshmana is not going to wake up, I will also die here. And he told Sugriva, immediately just carry out my orders. Go back, cross the sea of this huge ocean with all your Vanaras and go back. Keep Angada in your front. Keep Nala and Neela as your leaders and just go back. Enough of this. And I'm fully satisfied with all the wonderful service that was done by all the Vanaras, all the devas headed by Jambavan. Everyone, each one of you have put so much effort that no one else in this world can do. And in fact, at this point, Ramchandra, he mentions the names of all the Vanaras for their effort. He personally thanked each one of them. And when Ram was talking like this and they saw Lakshmana's condition like this, all the Vanaras were so choked up. They were crying when they heard these words of Ram. Then Vibhishan, actually, he had moved from this place because he thought, okay, at least let me gather some of the Vanaras to continue the fight. So he was going there and giving some instructions. And meanwhile, after some time, Vibhishan, he came back to just check on Ram and Lakshman. So he was out giving some specific orders to the remaining Vanara chiefs and telling them maybe we can still continue fighting and this is the strategy, and he was guiding them. So he thought, okay, once I give these orders, let me go back and check on Ram and Lakshman. He was hoping that they would wake up. So Vibhishan, with great force, he was walking and coming, holding his knees, and seeing him coming towards Ram and Lakshman, some of the smaller Vanaras who were nearby Ram and Lakshman, they started getting scared. They were aimlessly running in all directions. So Sugriva didn't understand anything. And he was asking Angada, what's happening? Why are these little Vanaras running around like this? And then Angada was like, oh, I really don't understand. And then Sugriva then realized that some of the Vanaras, they thought Vibhishan to be Indrajit. So they thought this Indrajit was doing Maya Yudha, right? He was like appearing and disappearing in different places. So they got confused between Indrajit and Vibhishan, and they thought Vibhishan is Indrajit and he's coming with his niece to again attack Ram and Lakshman. So then Sugriva, he requested Jambavan to tell all the Vanaras to calm down, and it was only Vibhishan. And he requested the Vanaras, you know, to get back into order and go back to the battlefield or continue the war that had already started. And some of the Vanaras, the main Vanaras especially, they were around Ram and Lakshman, still guarding them and seeing what they could do to help Lakshman regain consciousness and to instill more faith in Ram. So Vibhishan came forward and he saw the condition of Ram and Lakshman and he felt very, very bad. And at this time, initially Vibhishan was giving strength to Sugriva, you know, when he just some time back. Now Sugriva, he was reassuringly telling Vibhishan that actually nothing will happen, that they will wake up. I have confidence. And very soon, Vibhishan, you will be the king of Lanka. So don't worry, Vibhishan, everything will be fine. So the Vanaras began discussing with all the Vanara chiefs and all the elders. Many of the Vanaras were quite old, and they were there. They had seen a lot of things in this world. So the Vanaras were consulting with each other to see what would be the solution to wake up Ram and Lakshman. So at that time, there was this Vanara called as Sushena. Sushena was Sugriva's father-in-law, and he was a very old and wise Vanara. And Sushena told Sugriva, actually, I have an idea. Once, in olden times, there was a huge battle that happened between demigods and demons. So these demons, they were doing this Maya Yudha. That is, they were appearing somewhere and reappearing somewhere else, and they were becoming visible and invisible again and again. And using their arrows, they defeated so many demigods in the battle. So many of the demigods were wounded at that time, and many of them were unconscious and almost dead. That is, almost deprived of life. So at that time, Brihaspati actually revived those demigods. Brihaspati, what he did was, he treated them with the aid of herbs, with some sacred mantras. Now, I know where those herbs are available. So let these particular vanaras, Sampati, Panasa, and accompanied by their team, go very, very quickly to the ocean of milk. In the Kshira ocean, in the ocean of milk, that's where these herbs are available. And I know for sure that these Vanaras, they are very much familiar with mountainous herbs. So these Vanaras, Sampati, Panasa, all of them, they are very, very conversant with the different herbs found in mountains. So we will ask them to go and find Sanjeeva Karani and Vishalya Karani. These are the two herbs that are specifically required at this time to revive Lakshmana from the Nagastra. So we will make them find Sanjeeva Karani and Vishalya Karani and bring it back. So remember, these herbs are found in the mountains called as Chandra and Drona that appear in the ocean of milk. So basically, they have to reach the ocean of milk, and they should go to these two mountains, Chandra and Drona, and pick these two herbs and come back. And for their assistance, let Hanuman go, because Hanuman is very, very fast. He's the son of the wind god. Let him go with these Vanaras, and surely they will be successful in bringing these two herbs very fast. So this was the idea given by Sushena. So like this, when they were discussing the strategy as to what were the next steps to be taken, suddenly, in the meantime, huge wind like a cyclone arose, and they were heavy clouds, and it was covering the sky, and there were lightning striking everywhere, and the waves in the ocean, Lanka is an island, right? So the waves in the ocean, they were all rising and raising like tsunami. Everything was churning up. All these waves was raising, and there were huge clouds in the sky, and the mountains were trembling like as if there is an earthquake. Itasminantare vayur meghanchapi savidyuta paryasan sagare toyam kampayanniva parvatam. Then suddenly there was a sound of clapping of the wings of a huge bird. It was like thunder, and this bird was flying with his wings. And while he was flying, he was hitting huge trees, and the branches of these huge trees were struck and were falling down into the ocean. All the snakes became frightened, and the snakes inhabiting the ocean and all the marine animals inside the ocean, they got scared, and they went deep into the waters as the waters of the ocean were splashing around. And all the Vanaras in the battlefield, they saw something huge that was coming. Tato muhurta garuda vainateyam mahabalam vanara dudrushuhu sarve jvalantam iva pavakam. Just then, all the Vanaras, within a moment, they saw a huge eagle, Garuda, who is the son of Vinata, who appeared in the sky just like a blazing fiery comet that would reach the earth. So they saw this huge bird flapping his wings and coming. Now on seeing Garuda, this beautiful eagle that was coming, was so huge, he created some kind of fear in the demons. And all the serpents who were in that Nagasra binding Ram and Lakshman in the form of these sharp arrows, they instantly fled away. they just ran away. They just left Ram and Lakshman and they ran away because snakes are Garuda's natural food. So when Garuda came near, the question is, how did the Vanaras feel? So Garuda was coming, the snakes were terrified, the snakes were running away, and all the arrows were instantly just pulling out and releasing from the bodies of Ram and Lakshman. But what was the reaction of the Vanaras? So some of the Vanaras who were there, they began to hear Samaveda, and they were hearing the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Seriously? So you must be wondering, there nowhere in the Ramayana we have heard such a thing, that Vanaras heard Samaveda or Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So this is very interesting. This is just a connection. So there is one verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, 321-34, conversation between Manu and Kardama Prajapati. I'll read the translation of the verse and we'll see the purpose. Okay? While the sage Kardama stood looking on, the Lord left by the pathway leading to Vaikuntha, a path extolled by all great liberated souls. The sage stood listening as the hymns forming the basis of the Samaveda were vibrated by the flapping wings of the Lord's carrier Garuda. This is the verse. This is verse number 321-34. So purport of Srila Prabhupada is very interesting. In the Vedic literature, it is stated that the two wings of the transcendental bird Garuda, who carries the Lord everywhere, are the two divisions of the Samaveda known as Brihat and Ratnatara. Garuda works as the carrier of the Lord. Therefore, he is considered as the transcendental prince of all carriers. With his two wings, Garuda began to vibrate the Samaveda, which was chanted by great sages to pacify the Lord. The Lord is worshipped by Brahma, Lord Shiva, by Garuda and other demigods with selective poems. And great sages worship him with the hymns of the Vedic literature, such as the Upanishads and Samaveda. These Samaveda utterances are automatically heard by a devotee. Then another great devotee of the Lord, Garuda, flaps his wings. These Samaveda utterances are automatically heard by the devotee when another great devotee of the Lord, who is Garuda, flaps his wings. So it is clearly stated here that sage Kardama began to look to the path by which the Lord was being carried to Vaikuntha. It is thus confirmed that the Lord descends from his abode Vaikuntha in the spiritual sky and is carried by Garuda. The path which leads to Vaikuntha is not worshipped by the ordinary class of transcendentalists. Only those who are already liberated from the material bondage can become devotees of the Lord. Those who are not liberated from the material bondage cannot understand transcendental devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated, Yadatam Api Siddhanam, 7.3 Bhagavad Gita. There are many persons who are trying to attain perfection by striving for liberation from material bondage, and those who are actually liberated are called Brahma Bhuta, Bhagavatam 4.30.20, or Siddha. Only the Siddhas or persons liberated from material bondage can become devotees. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Anyone who is engaged in Krishna consciousness or devotional service is already liberated from the influence of the modes of material nature. Here, it is also confirmed that the path of devotional service is worshipped by liberated persons, not the conditioned souls. The conditioned soul cannot understand the devotional service to the Lord. No. Kardama Muni was a liberated soul who saw the Supreme Lord in person face to face. There was no doubt that he was liberated, and thus he could see Garuda carrying the Lord on the way to Vaikuntha and hear the flapping of his wings, vibrating the sound of Hare Krishna Mahamantra, which is the essence of the Samavedas. So, Prabhupada writes in different places about Garuda. Prabhupada says Garuda is known to be an inhabitant of the Kinnara Loka. Now, Kinnaras, they are half human-like form with wings. So Garuda is also known, Prabhupada writes, as an embodiment of the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, and more often he is known as the embodiment of the Vedas. The in the Vedas were to take a form, that would be Garuda. Okay, Garuda is the personification of the Vedas. And the most important part of the Vedas is the Sama Veda. That's why Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he says that among the Vedas, I am the Sama Veda. And Garuda's flapping of the wings are considered as the two divisions of the Sama Veda, known as Brihat and Ratnantara. And what is the essence of the Sama Veda? So, you embody the Vedas into a form, and that's called Garuda. Okay? Garuda is the Garuda represents, especially among the Vedas, he represents the Sama Veda. The flapping of his two wings are the two divisions of the Sama Veda. Now, what is the essence of the Sama Veda? Srila Prabhupada writes, the entire essence of the Sama Veda is the Mahamantra, Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So, when Garuda flaps his wings, pretty much the Sama Veda and the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is heard by the devotees. Devotees who are in fixed service of the Lord. Now the Vanaras were hearing the Sama Veda and the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So this is just a small connection I was trying to make based on Prabhupada's purpose. Of course, this is not really there in the Ramayana. It was just a connection between the two. What would have the monkeys heard? They should have heard the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and the utterances of the Sama Veda when Garuda was flying and coming there to serve Ram and Lakshman. Now, Garuda, he is an eternal associate of the Lord. And he is one devotee who somehow or the other wants to get a chance to participate in the Lord's pastimes. So we see here that in the Ramayana, he makes his appearance in the battlefield to serve the Lord. He somehow wants to serve. He is not directly present with the Vanaras to serve the Lord, but he wants to do his service. So he is coming here in this battlefield to come and serve the Lord. Now in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he appears almost in every other circumstance. In so many pastimes of the Lord that is described in the Bhagavatam, we see that he always accompanies the Lord. Like for example, when the Lord came, Lord Hari, he came to deliver Gajendra, he came on Garuda. When he appeared in front of Dhruva Maharaj, Krishnagarbha, when Lord Krishnagarbha appeared in front of Dhruva Maharaj, Garuda appeared along with him. Okay? In Pritu Maharaj's sacrifice, Garuda appeared. So during like that, in many, many places, when the Lord comes to save his devotee or to have interactions with his devotee, he is always accompanied by Garuda. You see, in any of the pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam, Garuda will always be there. Now, this is interesting. During the churning of the Milky Ocean, we were just talking about the Milky Ocean some time back. So remember the pastime, 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the churning of the milk ocean was happening. So during the churning of the milk ocean, actually, when Lord Vishnu, he appeared in that scene, he mounted on Garuda and he went to that location where the ocean was to be churned. Now, this is interesting. As soon as he reached this spot, Vishnu, mounted on Garuda, as soon as he reached this place where the ocean of milk was going to be churned, he very hurriedly, he asked Garuda to leave. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport why Garuda was asked to leave that spot immediately. So Srila Prabhupada explains, Garuda was asked by the Lord to leave that place because the plan was to bring the snake Vasuki, who was to be the rope for churning the ocean. So this Vasuki could not go there in the presence of Garuda. So Garuda, who is the carrier of Vishnu, is not a vegetarian. He eats big snakes. Snakes as his food. So he eats big snakes. That was a snake like Vasuki would be a big feast for him. So Vasuki, being a great snake, would be the natural food of Garuda, who is the chief of the birds. So Lord Vishnu, because the task had to be completed, Vasuki had to be brought there. Lord Vishnu therefore asked Garuda to leave that place. But Vasuki could come and churn the ocean with the Mandara mountain. He was used as the rope to churn the ocean. So like this, the Lord makes wonderful arrangements this is how Garuda served even during the churning of the ocean. Now in Bali Maharaj's pastime, also there also you will see Garuda. Garuda appears towards the end when the demons, they were attacking, they understood that this Vamana is nothing but the Supreme Lord. So the demons, they got very furious and they started attacking, understanding the Lord's desire. And Garuda who actually appeared there next to the Lord, he immediately arrested Bali Maharaj with the ropes of Varuna. Towards the end, if you read the pastime, you will see that Bali Maharaj was actually arrested by Garuda using these ropes of Varuna, Varunastra. He uses that and he binds Bali Maharaj. So, Prabhupada writes that Garuda is a constant companion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows the confidential part of the Lord's desire. If the Lord desires something, immediately Garuda will know of it because he's such a great devotee, such a great companion of the Lord. So, the Lord has a desire, immediately Garuda will know what exactly the Lord's desire is. So, Gari Maharaj's tolerance and devotion were very, very nice. I mean, he's a great devotee too. Bali Maharaj was a great devotee. For Atma Nivedanam, we take the example of Bali Maharaj. He's such a wonderful devotee. Garuda arrested Bali Maharaj. Prabhupada is so beautiful. He writes, Garuda arrested Bali Maharaj to show to the entire universe the greatness of the king Bali's tolerance. So, that's how there's a transcendental competition between the devotees to serve the Lord. So, of course, when we hear Krishna performing pastimes, especially Dwarka pastimes, we know that on the flag of Krishna's chariot, of course, it was marked with Garuda. That was his symbol. So, Garuda, as the emblem, he was always there with Krishna, always serving him. And in one pastime, actually, Krishna personally asked Garuda to come. And which pastime was that? It was the pastime of Narakasura, Bhaumasura. So during that time, Krishna personally asked Garuda to come, and he mounted on Garuda along with Satyabhama, and he went and fought with Narakasura, and after that he went to Indra's abode on Garuda. Both of them, they mounted on Garuda, they went to Indra's abode, and there they got the Parijata tree. They got the Parijata tree from the heavenly planet, and they put it on the back of Garuda, and they flew back and came back to Dwarka. So there also Garuda serves. No, we saw Dwaraka, right? So Dwaraka, of course, the Lord would keep showing that he is the Supreme Lord. Here and there, everywhere he would show. He was very open about it. But talking of Vrindavan pastimes, this is very, very sweet. Vrindavan pastime, there was this mood of sweetness. Krishna wouldn't establish himself so much. Now, because it would spoil the mood of the gopas and gopis and the Yashoda and everyone. So he wouldn't do that too much. And he was trying to be a simple cowherd boy. And all the Brajavasis had this mood where they were thinking, oh, this is my little son, he's my friend, he's my little lover. So that's how they were looking at Krishna. So Krishna didn't openly summon Garuda like how he did there in Dwaraka. He said, okay, Garuda, come, I'm going to mount on you and go and kill Narakasura. He didn't do that. He didn't say, I'm going to kill this demon, come, I'm going to fly on him. He didn't do that much. So what he did is actually explained by Rupa Goswami. And this is a nectar of devotion, and it's very interesting. Rupa Goswami, he talks about the emotions that Garuda underwent during the Lord's pastimes in Vrindavan. So this is very sweet. In Nectar of Devotion, verse number 28, Rupa Goswami says, perspiration due to anger was exhibited by Garuda during one of the pastimes. Which pastime was that? It was during the pastime of the Govardhan Leela. So once, when Indra, he was sending torrents of rain over Vrindavan, at that time, Garuda, he was observing this incident, hiding from behind the clouds. He didn't come there openly, it seems. He was hiding behind the clouds, and he was very curious to see what was happening, because his Lord was there. So he was watching, and he got very angry when he saw what Indra was doing, that he was sending huge torrents of rain. And because of his anger, he began perspiring. That is one rasa that Garuda was exhibiting. Then Nectar of Devotion 30, verse 30, it says, when Krishna was fighting with Kalia, the snake, by dancing on his head, Kalia once, when he was fighting with Krishna, he bit Krishna on the leg once, it seems. Okay? So at that time, Garuda became so angry. And he was like, his whole body was shaking with anger. And he was telling to himself, he was murmuring, this Krishna is so powerful that just by his thundering voice, the wives of Kalia had miscarriages. Because my Lord has been insulted by the snake, I wish to go and eat him up immediately. I just want to go and devour him. But I cannot go there. I cannot go in the presence of my Lord because he may become angry with me. So I want to go, but I can't go. So this is an instance of eagerness to act in ecstatic love as a result of dishonor that has happened to Krishna. This is one of the emotions Rupa Goswami discusses. So Kalia was feeling, my Lord is being dishonored. The snake is biting him on his feet. How dare he? I'll go and eat him up now. But then Garuda is thinking, no, I don't want to go and spoil everything. Krishna will get upset with me.
So why was he afraid? Because it was an arrangement made, right? Like you must all be remembering Saubari Rishi's curse to Garuda. Garuda was banned from coming there and all that. And moreover, Garuda didn't want to interfere in this pastime and, you know, create something different there. So he was sitting there and watching, and he was angry. He wanted to come, but he couldn't come. So that is another emotion that is discussed by Rupa Goswami. And he also says, Rupa Goswami says, that the affection of Shiva, Garuda and Uddhava is a mixture of servitude and fraternity. That means both friendship and servitude. That is their actual rasa. For Garuda also, it's the same thing. Now, in Chaitanya Leela, now we are going to celebrate Gaur Purnima very soon. So in Chaitanya Leela, where did Garuda come? Where did he appear? I think we all know this because we are still reading Madhya Leela now. So in chapter 9, South India Yatra, very, it should be fresh in our memories. When Mahaprabhu was traveling in a South India Yatra, he came across some Buddhists. So these Buddhists had heard about the scholarship of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they came with him with great pride, and they brought all their disciples with them. And this leader of the Buddhist cult, he was a very learned scholar, and to establish his Buddhist philosophy, a Buddhist philosophy is known as the 9 philosophical conclusions of Buddhism. With that only they make their debates with the Vaishnavas and other theologists. So he came before Lord Chaitanya, and he began to speak in a debate. And here Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, although Buddhists are unfit for discussion and should not even be seen by Vaishnavas, because it is said that if a Vaishnava even sees the Buddhist, because they are preaching a philosophy that is not acceptable, they should go and take a bath. You know, that is the intensity of how you should avoid this philosophy. That's what is told in the Vaishnava scriptures. So basically, Buddhism is not a philosophy that should be heard because it can change your mind. You know, you don't want to hear such nonsensical philosophies. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in spite of it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in a very humble manner, he spoke to them just to decrease their false pride. He's the Supreme Lord, he can do it. So he did it to decrease the false pride that was there in the Buddhists. So the scriptures of the Buddhist cult are chiefly based on argument and logic, and they contain 9 chief principles. This is there in Madhya Leela. We can actually read it maybe again if you get time. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated the Buddhists in their argument, they couldn't establish their cult. The teacher of the Buddhist cult sent forth the 9 principles, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu broke them into pieces with a strong logic. All the mental speculators and learned scholars were defeated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when the people began to laugh at the Buddhist philosopher, the Buddhist leader, he felt both shame and fear. So these Buddhists, accompanied by his leader, their leader, they could understand that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a Vaishnava, and they returned home very, very unhappy. So they felt defeated and they were very unhappy about the whole thing. But later, however, because they couldn't defeat Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by proper logic and argument, they began to plot against the Lord. So they had an idea, they made a plot against the Lord, and the Buddhists, they brought a huge plate of untouchable food and presented it in front of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and told Mahaprabhu that it was Mahaprasadam, Krishna Mahaprasadam. So when this contaminated food was offered to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what happened? A huge bird appeared on the spot. Garuda, again. He just wanted to serve the Lord. So he came flying there. He picked up the plate with his beak and he flew away. Indeed, the untouchable food that was offered to Mahaprabhu fell on the head of the Buddhist. The large bird dropped the plate also on the head of the Buddhist teacher. The chief of the Buddhists was there, right? What Garuda did is, he spilled the food on their head, and that big, huge metal plate, he dropped it on the head of the Buddhist teacher. So when it fell on his head, it made a huge sound. This plate was made of metal, and when the edge of this plate hit the head of the teacher, it cut him. And the teacher immediately fell down to the ground unconscious. He was bleeding. So when the teacher fell unconscious, his Buddhist disciples cried out and ran and fell at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for shelter. Then they all pray to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, addressing him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and saying, "Sir, please excuse our offenses. Please have mercy on us and bring our spiritual master back to life." Then the Lord told the Buddhist disciples, "You should chant the names of Krishna and Hari very loudly near the ear of your spiritual master. So by this method, your spiritual master, he will regain his consciousness." So following Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's advice, all the Buddhist disciples, they began to chant the holy names of Krishna congregationally. So when all the disciples chanted these beautiful holy names of Krishna, Rama and Hari, the Buddhist teacher, he regained consciousness, and immediately he also began to chant the holy name of Hari. So when the spiritual master of the Buddhist began to chant the holy name of Krishna and submitted to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the people who were gathered there were astonished. So like this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the son of Sachi Devi, then, of course, he converted everyone to Vaishnavas, and suddenly and playfully, he disappeared from there, from everyone's sight. So, and of course, it was impossible for anyone to find him. He just disappeared in a second. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued his journey, and further he went to Tirumala Tirupati. So this is from Madhya Leela chapter 9. This particular pastime is narrated by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and here also Garuda appears. So somehow, you know, Garuda tries to make his appearance here and there whenever possible to serve the Lord. So coming back to the Ramayana, we have digressed a lot. Coming back to Ramayana, so Garuda, he appeared in the sky, and all the monkeys were watching, all the snakes were fleeing away, and then he landed next to Ram and Lakshman. So the minute he saw that his two lords, Ram and Lakshman, were there and they were fallen like that, he offered his obeisances, and with his wings, that is his hands, Garuda's hands are his wings, so he very softly touched their faces and their body, and he wiped it. He just wiped it with his wings. So when Garuda was wiping Ram and Lakshman like that, wiping their bodies, their radiant moon-like faces like that, their wounds touched by Garuda were immediately healed. Their bodies immediately became smooth and well-rounded with the touch of Garuda. Their luster, their valor, strength, resolution, all the qualities they had, their intelligence, their memory, everything were redoubled after this. So this was the service of Garuda. And then Garuda lifted them up personally and he embraced them with love. Then Ram told Garuda with a lot of love, "I feel so happy seeing you. I feel bliss. I feel the same happiness that I feel when I see my father Dasharath or my grandfather Aja." Then Ram asks this question to Garuda, "Ko Bhavan, who are you? You look so beautiful." He asks like that to Garuda. So he's saying, "Oh, who are you? You look so beautiful. You're having such a blissful appearance. You're wearing garlands. You have such clean garments. You're adorned with divine ornaments. Who are you?" Like that, he asked Garuda. And Garuda was standing there and smiling and thinking, "Wow, this is my Lord. I am his eternal servant. I've always been his carrier, and he's asking me who I am." So Garuda smiled. See, here Ram, he didn't want to openly again reveal his supremacy there in the war field. And Garuda understood his mood. Garuda understood the mood of his master. Remember, the Prabhupada's purport, immediately Garuda understands what the Lord has in his mind. So Garuda understood the mood and he smiled. And then he said, "Oh Ram, I'm actually your very close friend and I'm your servant. My name is Garuda and I'm as close as I'm very close to you as much as your breath is very close to you. I'm that close to you. And I just came here for the purpose of helping you. Don't worry about it. Just think of me as your servant and as your close friend." Now, these serpents, they were actually there in these arrows. These serpents are the son of Kadru. So who's Kadru? Kadru is the stepmother of Garuda. Vinata is the mother. Stepmother is Kadru. Kadru had serpents. Vinata had Aruna and Garuda. So Garuda is saying, "I know these snakes. I know them very well. They are my stepbrothers. and they had attacked you. So in my presence, they generally run away. So they ran away. Now, hearing about this incident that you both were bound by these snakes, I came rushing because of my love and friendship to you. So you have been released from these dangerous arrows. Now, both of you be very careful all the time. See, these demons by nature, they do a lot of magic and they're very deceitful. They're not very straightforward in a battle. But for you, your pure-mindedness, your straightforwardness, all these are a natural quality in both of you. Okay, you're very straightforward, you're very pure-minded. So these are your strengths. That's good. But don't trust these demons that they will also be like that. Don't trust them in a battle. Be very alert and vigilant. And Ram, for sure, you are going to win over Ravana. You are going to take back Sita for sure. And all success will be yours. So saying like that, again, embracing Ram, Lakshman, circumambulating them with respect, he takes their permission to leave and then Garuda leaves. So like this, Garuda, Valmiki says, Garuda who's Shigra Vikrama, very swift and flying, who's Suparna, this is one of the names of Garuda. Suparna means having beautiful wings, such beautiful wings. That's why Ram, when he says, who are you? Ko Bhavan, you have such beautiful wings. First he glorifies the wings. The wings of Garuda are so beautiful. So Valmiki says, Garuda, who is Shigra Vikrama, swift and flying, and who is Suparna, having such beautiful wings, who had just healed Ram of all his wounds in the presence of the Vanaras, having paid obeisances to Ram, having embraced Lord Ram, entered the sky in the speed of wind. So like this, Ram and Lakshman, they were healed of their wounds, and all the Vanaras were so happy, they were so happy, and they were roaring in joy and lashed their tails in happiness. And they all screamed again, victoriously screamed. And they again picked up huge trees and rocks and boulders. And having this desire to assume the fight again with full speed, they all proceeded. Now, hearing the shouts and cries of the Vanaras, Ravana got confused. He was like, now what happened? I just thought these two, Ram and Lakshman, are fallen there. Now what happened? Why are all these Vanaras so happy? Why are they screaming like this? So he asked some of his demons to go and discover the cause why these monkeys are rejoicing like this. So the demons, they climbed up on their defense walls and they saw that this Ram and Lakshman have been relieved by these arrows. And they are coming back so beautiful and so strong. So they were like, they didn't understand what happened. How did this happen? So they went running and they informed Ravana that the two brothers, Ram and Lakshman, are actually alive and they are appearing like two strong elephants in the battlefield. And Ravana's face turned pale. Like, what is this? Then he called his demon associate by the name Dhumraksha. So this demon was very, very strong. So he called him. He said, Dhumraksha, go with your army and kill Ram and Lakshman and all the Vanaras. So Dhumraksha, along with his army, he entered the western gate of Lanka where Hanuman was standing. Hanuman with his group was stationed at the western gate. So when Dhumraksha entered the battlefield, he saw many bad omens and he felt disturbed. And anyhow, he entered the battlefield and he started attacking all the Vanaras. And a huge battle started between the demons and the Vanaras. And the battle reached such a huge proportion that many, many Vanaras and demons were killed in large numbers. So when Dhumraksha finally pounced on Hanuman, Hanuman shattered his chariot into pieces with a huge rock. And then Dhumraksha actually hit Hanuman with his mace. And Hanuman got so angry that with the speed of wind, he took a huge rock and he hit it in the middle of Dhumraksha's skull, and his skull was shattered and his head broke into pieces. All his limbs fell down into the ground and it was like a huge mountain crumbling and he lost his life. So Dhumraksha was killed by Hanuman. Next, seeing that Dhumraksha had been killed, the news was relayed to Ravana. Next, Ravana sent Vajradhamstra. Now, Vajradhamstra and his army, they came to the southern gate where Angada was stationed. Now, again, the Vanaras had a tough fight with the demons, and Angada fought with all these demons, chopping off their heads, and Vajradamshtra was finally killed. So once he heard that Vajradamshtra was killed, Ravana next sent Akampana. Akampana, again, he came, and again, when he came to the battlefield, he was visualizing all the bad omens, and there was a huge war between the Vanaras and the demons. Kumuda, Nala, and Mainda were all attacking the demons in huge numbers. Then Akampana, what he did was, he started shooting multiple arrows continuously at all the Vanaras. It was like a rain of arrows that were covering the Vanaras at a single shot. So when Hanuman saw this, he got really scared, seeing so many arrows shooting so many Vanaras. So Hanuman, he went running to the rescue of all the Vanaras. And then he took on Akampana, and there was a great fight between Akampana and Hanuman. And Hanuman struck the head of Akampana with a huge tree, and Akampana was also dead. Next, Ravana sent Prahasta. See, it was all happening really fast. He was one huge demon after the other was being killed by the Vanaras. So we'll go through this really fast. Then Prahashta came to the battle. Now, Prahashta was one of the favorites of Ravana. He was very close to Prahashta. Prahashta had come to the battlefield, and he came to the eastern gate. Again, many bad omens appear, and Prahashta entered the battlefield, and the Vanara armies, they saw this Prahashta. In fact, when Prahashta came, Ram was smiling, and he asked Vibhishan, "Hey, who is this demon? He has a huge body, and he's coming with great speed. He looks so heroic. Who is he? Tell me about him." And Vibhishan tells Ram that he's actually, this Prahasta is he's a very big demon. He's guarded by 2/3 of the army of Lanka. And this demon has such a great power, and he's skilled in the use of all kinds of mystic power, and he's very, very courageous. His name is Prahasta, and he's actually the army general of Ravana. He's such an important person, Prahasta was. So, but the Vanaras, they were attacking these demons with their hands and fists and stones, and the demons were shooting arrows, and Prahasta and Neela, they came face to face to fight, both of them. And Prahasta attacked Neela by throwing different weapons on him, and Neela is actually the son of the fire god, okay, and he's actually the commander-in-chief of the Vanara army. So you see, commander-in-chief fights with the commander-in-chief. Okay, army general fights with army general. So Neela, he came face to face, and what happened? He finally killed Prahasta's horses, and he broke the bow of Prahasta. Finally, he took a very big rock, and he breaks Prahasta's head into several pieces, and Prahasta also dies. Then again, they go and give the information to Ravana. Now Ravana was extremely angry. His heart was so filled with grief. Even his Prahasta was dead. He just couldn't believe it. Then he declared to all his army leaders, "Now I myself will go to the battlefield without any hesitation, and I will go and destroy all the enemies, and I will gain victory." Just like how the forest is consumed by blazing forest fires, I will burn down that army of Vanaras with my arrows. Today, I will satiate this earth with the blood of all the Vanaras. Saying like that, all the heroic speech, Ravana, he got onto his chariot, and very majestically, he came onto the battlefield along with some of his favorite demons who were still alive. There were some huge demons who were still alive, strong and huge demons. So when Ram saw Ravana and his demoniac leaders coming forward, again, Ram was like, okay, there are some important people coming now. So he called Vibhishan and he asked him, "So Vibhishan, tell me about all of these people." So at that time, Vibhishan began to tell Ram about each of the demons. He said, "Ram, do you see that hero who's got the face of a coppery color and who's coming on the back of an elephant? He's known as Akampana." Now again, this is Akampana 2. It is not the Akampana who's already dead. There were two demons called Akampana. Okay, so Akampana 2 has come with Ravana. Then he says, "The one who's standing on the chariot, who has a beautiful bow, who has the image of a lion and who looks like an elephant, that is Indrajit. And he is renowned for all the boons that he received from Lord Brahma." Then he says that archer who's standing on the chariot with all this huge bow and who has an exceedingly overgrown body, he's called as Atikaya. So like that, Vibhishan identifies all the other demons, chief demons with Ravana. So we saw Akampana too, and then we saw Indrajit, Atikaya, and Vibhishan also identifies Mahodara, Pishacha, Trishiras, Nikumba, Narakanta, Kumba. So he identifies all these demons. I won't get into the details. There's so much description about each one of them. But we don't have to meditate on their form, so we'll just leave that. Then he describes all of them. Then Vibhishan, finally, he points out to Ravana. See, this is our chief person, right? So he points out to Ravana and he says, see, Rama, you see there, that is Ravana. See that person, that huge demon who's decked with beautiful crown. He's shining like the sun. He's wearing such beautiful earrings that is covering his face. He looks like the Vindhya Mountains. So that is Ravana, and that is the chief of all demons, the king of all demons. So when Ramchandra, he caught the sight of Ravana, he was exclaiming, oh, what glory, what majesty Ravana has. He's looking so great. Ravana, he's beaming like the sun. I'm not even able to gaze at him repeatedly. He looks so magnificent. He's shining. His body is so radiant. I've never seen anyone like this. I've not seen even a demigod like this. Wow. Ram was looking at his beauty. Not even beauty, his magnificence, I would say. And he was glorifying Ravana like this. Then immediately Ram said, okay, anyway, he looks really great. But tough luck. Today he has come within my sight. And today I will surely take revenge. I'm not going to leave him. He has taken Sita from me. This is the highest offense a person can do. He has taken away Sita, and today I will teach him a lesson. So Ram said that, and Ram, who was standing next to Lakshmana, he took up his bow, and then he stood erect. He took out an arrow. He was taking an aim. So he claimed, Ravana, today I will kill you. You know, today I'm going to teach you a very good lesson. You have come in front of me, in front of my eyes. So meanwhile there, Ravana was alerting all the demons. He was saying, okay, all you leaders, take up your positions. And Ravana said, I am going to go ahead. So Ravana, he split this huge ocean of Vanaras across, and he came like a gigantic fish that would swim across the ocean. So like that, he started moving in his chariot, splitting across this ocean of Vanaras. And he came in front, and as he was proceeding, he has not yet reached Ram, okay? So as he was proceeding further, our Sugriva. Sugriva gets very excited when he sees Ravana. So the minute Sugriva caught glimpse of Ravana, Sugriva, he had this instantaneous reaction towards Ravana. He ran towards Ravana and stopped him. And he took a huge rock and he threw it on Ravana. And seeing this huge rock coming towards him, Ravana quickly broke it into pieces. And Ravana, he took an arrow and he hurled it at Sugriva to kill Sugriva. So that arrow that was released by Ravana was as good as a thunderbolt, and it reached Sugriva and it pierced his body. It was it reached Sugriva and actually wounded him very, very badly. And Sugriva almost lost consciousness and he fell on the earth. Then Gavaksha, Gavaya, Sushena, Rishabha, Jyotirmukha, Nala, all of them got very angry because their leader was struck. How dare you strike Sugriva? He's our leader. They got very, very angry and they took huge boulders and rushed towards Ravana. And Ravana, effortlessly, he shot so many arrows and covered all these Vanaras with a huge shower of arrows. Then when Ram was seeing all this, he said, so what did you do? You have attacked Sugriva and all these Vanaras are being struck like this. Ram started running. He started running once when he saw all his devotees being hurt like this. So when Ram was running like that, Lakshmana stopped and he stopped and brother, please stop. And then he joined his pants and he said, I have a request. My dear brother, I want to go and face Ravana. So first let me fight. I will go and kill him today for sure. So please give me permission. Then Ram said, okay. And he told Lakshmana, see Lakshmana, you can go, but you should be very, very alert in this fight. This is no ordinary fight. Ravana is no ordinary demon. He has so much strength. And he possesses outstanding prowess in a war, so you should be very careful. Okay, nobody in the three worlds is able to withstand his fury, and there is no doubt about it. And this is my advice to you. I'll give you a very important advice. Go and seek out his weak points. Guard against your weaknesses. Defend yourself very carefully with your eye and your bow. See so nicely, Ram is saying. You have to be very vigilant in the battle. You should see what is the weakness of your enemy. Your weaknesses you should suppress. Okay, you should not let out your weakness in front of your opponent. And how vigilant should you be in the battlefield? You should guard yourself with your bow. Obviously, that's the first obvious thing, right? You have a weapon, you guard yourself with the weapon. And also with your eye, because you should see where the arrows are coming from, what Ravana is doing, every move of this. You should be very, very smart in finding out. So guard yourself with your bow and your eye and look out for his weak points. And you be careful. So he says this. And Lakshmana, he goes in front of Ravana. And Ravana was had that huge arms, you know. Like we saw, I think, in one of our previous discussions about how big Ravana's arms were. And he was holding this fiery bow. And he was waiting for Lakshmana to come. So, meanwhile, Lakshmana was proceeding towards Ravana. And meanwhile, Ravana, he was not standing quiet, right? So, he was showering a rain of arrows on all the Varanas. So, seeing these rain of arrows falling on the Vanaras, still Lakshmana hasn't reached Ravana. Meanwhile, what was happening is that when so many arrows were falling on all the Vanaras, Hanuman, who's Vayuputra, seeing this, he rushed, he was close by, and he rushed to the spot where Ravana was shooting arrows, and he went and checked on Ravana, okay, so that this rain of arrows could be brought to an end. So he went near Ravana's chariot, and Hanuman lifted his right arm and threatened Ravana. He said, "You think you have obtained a boon that the Devas, demons, Gandharvas, Nagas, Yakshas, no one can do anything to you? But did you take a boon that the Vanaras cannot do anything to you? These Vanaras will surely be a danger to you. Today I am going to kill you." So hearing these words of Hanuman, Ravana said, "Hey monkey, seriously? You are going to kill me? Okay, just take a strike. I will give you one free hit. Hit me on my chest. Come on, hit me. And once I check on your strength, then I'll be assured whether I will defeat you or not, or you will defeat me. Let's see." So hearing these words of Ravana, Hanuman said, "Hey Ravana, remember I have killed your son Aksha already. Remember Akshat Kumara was killed when he came as a messenger. So he said, I have already killed your son." Then Ravana got very irritated and he struck Hanuman with his palm very violently. And then when he was struck by Ravana, Hanuman almost lost his balance. Then he secured his balance within a second, and with great anger he went and hit Ravana with his palm. So with a violent impact of the blow of Hanuman with his palms, Ravana shook like a mountain as if there was an earthquake. He just shook like that on the chariot. And Ravana, he just lost it for a second, and again he regained his breath. And then he looked at Hanuman and he said, "Ha, well done, monkey. You are a good enemy. You're worthy of my praise. And you are not bad. You have a lot of strength. Huh? You can fight with me." Then Hanuman told, "Hey, Ravana, foolish fellow, why are you simply boasting? Now you come and fight with me properly." So hearing these words of Hanuman, Ravana was very angry. His eyes became red hot, and with great force, he knocked down violently on Hanuman's chest. So under the shock, Hanuman fell down. And seeing Hanuman exhausted, you see, you know, in those days, they were following, at least most of the times, they were following these war codes where they wouldn't hit an enemy before he has regained his consciousness or before he has taken his weapon. Like that, there were some war codes that they were following. So Ravana, he just saw that Hanuman was exhausted and he had fallen down. So he just proceeded. He just proceeded towards the next Vanara. And who was the next Vanara who attacked him? It was Neela. Now Neela had woken up by now. And he was ready. He was just ready with, Neela was always woken up. So Greeva was the one who was hit and he's recovering. Neela was all ready. So Neela, he came and Ravana was attacking Neela. And Neela was tormented by Ravana's arrows. And then he threw a huge rock at Ravana. So Hanuman, on the other side, he had regained his consciousness and his breath. And he was calling out to Ravana. He was furiously calling, "Hey Ravana, Ravana, why did you run away? come and fight with me. What is this? Why are you going and fighting with someone else? You were already fighting with me. Why did you leave me and go? And then, anyhow, Ravana, he was still busy fighting with Neela. So he was, Neela threw a rock, and Ravana shattered that rock. And seeing that rock crumbling into pieces, Neela started throwing all kinds of trees, like Ashwakarna trees, Shala trees, Chuta trees, and various type of other trees. And Ravana, with his arrows, he was bursting these trees into pieces and just, you know, shattering it like that, effortlessly shattering everything. So Neela didn't know what to do with this Ravana. So he did one funny thing. He reduced his size, and he started jumping on Ravana's chariot. So sometimes he would go and land on Ravana's tip of the chariot. Sometimes he would go and stand on the tip of Ravana's bow. Sometimes he would go and stand on his crown, on Ravana's head. Sometimes on the flag. Like Neela was giving Ravana a tough time. He was jumping everywhere, and Ravana couldn't catch him at all. He was so fast and so quick, and he was so tiny. So Ravana couldn't catch him. And Lakshman, Hanuman, Ram, all of them, now they were, you know, they had almost reached the spot, and they were astonished seeing Neela doing this. And Ravana was also very amazed at Neela's agility. He was so agile. He was so fast. And Ravana thought, okay, I cannot control this anymore. So I'm going to now throw my Agniya weapon, Agni Astra. That is, you know, it's loaded with Agni. So he wanted to throw that weapon on Neela. Now, when Neela was jumping from one place to the other, at one point he perched on the tip of the chariot of Ravana. So at that time, Ravana said, "Hey, monkey, you're trying to show magic to me. You're showing magic to me. I am a demon and I'm the king of magic, and you're trying to do magic to me." He took that Agni Astra and he threw it on Neela. Now, Neela's body was hit by this astra, and what is the fire weapon, right? So it started burning Neela's body. But what happened to Neela? Nothing can happen to Neela, because who is Neela? Neela is the son of fire god. So his father was very favorable to him, and not only that, he himself had that capability, right? So his father's blessing, his own capability, nothing happened to him. It just caught fire for some time, and then the fire went off. That's all. He was just struck down. He just slept on the floor for some time, and he was okay. So, but of course, he was unconscious for a few minutes. And seeing Neela unconscious and Ravana was very eager to fight, Ravana finally rushed towards Lakshmana. So finally, Lakshmana reached the spot. Okay, before Lakshmana had reached, all these monkeys gave it a short one. And now Lakshmana reached the spot. So I think we should stop here. We have crossed time. I wanted to do Lakshmana fighting also, but that's okay. We'll do it next class. So, yeah, we have a lot to cover now in Yuddhakanda. So I'll stop here. Anyone has any corrections, questions, comments, please go ahead. And thank you for your patient listening. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Priti Vilasini Mataji. This is Tulsi Gopi Dasi.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Yes, Mataji.
This is such a wonderful class. It's almost making me feel as if I'm part of the Ramayana, and I'm hearing, seeing like a live, you know. But so this is very, very enlightening to hear the glories of Garuda. I always enjoy, you know, hearing about Garuda's pastimes. I always had this doubt in my mind that Garuda is always, you know, with Vishnu. He's like a Vaikunthavasi. Mm. And yet, why do they describe as if he eats snakes? Is it usually because he's a devotee, he would think there is no, you know, eating weird things and meat and living beings and things like that. So how do we explain this, that a pure devotee, a liberated soul, in whatever body he is, that he experiences hunger and this desire to eat, you know, a snake? How do you explain these things?
Yeah, so this, actually, I was reading Prabhupada's conversations while preparing for this class. So Prabhupada talks about Garuda to, I think, some of the disciples. There are some morning walk conversations and also class conversations during class. Prabhupada has said these things about Garuda, how he eats snakes and things like that. So these are some words of Prabhupada. I don't know if it's going to directly answer your question, but it will be helpful. So Prabhupada says that Garuda, he's a bird, he's an eagle, and naturally his food is snakes, so he goes and eats all the snakes. And also he has his eternal enmity with his with the sons of Khadru. So this goes on. Now, now the other point is, how is Garuda non-vegetarian? This is a question that is asked by devotees, right? Devotees are supposed to be vegetarians. So this is what Prabhupada says. Prabhupada says, vegetarian or non-vegetarian, they are not too much worried about it. Okay? We are Krishna Prasadians. That means we just take Krishna Prasad. That is what we are worried about. So don't worry too much about being a vegetarian or non-vegetarian, that-tarian, this-tarian. All these designations we don't have. We just take Krishna Prasadam and we take the mercy of Lord Krishna. That's all. So this is one answer that Prabhupada is giving there. So if you, in fact, he made one statement. Of course, this is not a statement that you have to take loosely and start practicing. But Prabhupada said that if you become a very good, a perfect devotee of Garuda, then you can also eat snakes or you can also eat non-fish. So this is what Prabhupada said. But again, not to be taken loosely, but that's what it is. So these are some statements of Prabhupada. Even I was curious, actually. Yeah.
So sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but direct answer I don't have. Okay.
So he is a Kinnara, resident of the Kinnara Loka. That means he doesn't live in Vaikuntha and he just flies when Vishnu needs him. He goes from Kinnara to Vaikuntha or what?
No. So that particular verse, I think it's in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, there it says he's also, the purport says he's also a resident of the Kinnara Loka. Because remember in that canto, everyone offers their prayers. In different planets, at that time Prabhupada says. So it's not that he's not there in Vaikuntha. He also takes residence in Kinnara Loka. That's all.
I see. So he expands himself and like he has a siddhi like Lord himself to simultaneously be at more than one places.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you for your association.
Gopinath ki jai ho, hari hari bol, dandvat pranam. Mataji, you take, without taking breath, you are explaining the lilas, Mataji. Heads up to you, 100 dandvat pranam, always Srila Prabhupada and Gurudev, Jai Shri Radhe.
Thank you, Mataji. All glories to Gurudev and Srila Prabhupada. All their mercy. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna Preeti Vilasni Mataji, Agarashul Prabhupada. Thank you again for a wonderful, wonderful narration. And as Mataji was saying, Tosi Mataji was saying, I also love Garuda. And Garuda. Mm. So it's just wonderful to hear so many different leelas with him involved. And I especially love the chapter what Kardama Muni sees and the beautiful description, the prayers that are in there, and the description that he gives of the Supreme Lord when he arrives. It's like, it's beautiful, beautiful prayers. I just love those. So thank you for that. And I was, you know, about this whole Garuda's, you know, being non-vegetarian and stuff like this, I was just thinking that I think it just goes to show that whatever station in life you may be in, you know, see, obviously that is his, I mean, he's a bird after all, so that's his natural food. But regardless of that, he's a pure devotee. So, I mean, so I think we as devotees, when we see other devotees, we can't really make judgment calls on them. We are in no position because we don't understand their relationship with the Lord. So I think it just seems a nice realization in that, you know, there's somebody as pure as Garuda. And like I said, that's his station in life. That's his position in life. That's his relationship with the Lord. So each of us has our own relationship with the Lord. And, you know, that designates how we act and how we behave. So just a thought. Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Such a beautiful realization, Mataji. That is very, very true. Something you need to apply. Same Garuda.
One more thing occurred to me. That so Garuda, he, like Prabhupada said, we are Krishna Prasaditarian. So Garuda offers the snakes to the Lord and eats them as his, or I don't know, maybe. And if a snake becomes devotee, then probably Garuda won't look at him in that sense, right?
Oh, yeah. That's such a good point. Yeah, because when Kaliya pastime happened, Krishna finally said, now you have the marks of my lotus feet on your hood, so Garuda will never come near you.
I see. Yeah, correct. I heard about that too.
That's so nice, Mataji. Thank you for bringing that. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you so much, Mataji, for such a beautiful narration. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Pavitra Madhavi, Mataji. Thank you.
Good job. Hare
Krishna, Mataji. This is Gaurangi.
Blendavats, Mataji.
Yeah, just this last point that you're appreciating so much, I actually didn't catch it.
So Tulsi Gopi Mataji was saying that Garuda will not hurt a devotee, like even if he's a snake, Garuda will not eat him or something like that. So for that, in the Kaliya pastime, we see that initially there was a lot of enmity between Kaliya and Garuda and all that. And later, when after Krishna danced on his hoods, Krishna specifically says that now that your hoods have my lotus feet on it and the marks of my lotus feet are present on the hood, hereafter Garuda will never trouble you because he has seen the lotus imprints of my feet, so he will never come near you and trouble you. That means if the snake is a devotee, as Mataji was saying, so if, for example, even Adishesha is a devotee, right? So Garuda wouldn't harm Adishesha, or he wouldn't harm Kaliya anymore now after that pastime.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prithvi Narasimha, Mataji. Wonderful.
Hare Krishna.
wonderful class. Well, I mean, it's not class, but it's just a continuous flow of the nectar. Thank you very much. And it just stopped. Thank you very much, Mataji. Very, very wonderful.
Thank you so much, Mataji, for always being there for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so if you don't have any questions or comments, we can end the class. Thank you all for joining and for your patient listening. Vancha kalpataru vascha kripa sindhu bevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo